Hi, and thanks to Sarah and Summer and Lainey. I'm Esty Dinor. I will be back here next week. Bye bye.
You're listening to WORT Madison. Helicopters in the night, attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, no precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. Sugar and spice, I feel nice. A sugar and spice, so nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, more or less, Mr. Funkins.
A little bit less than more.
Depends. How you doing?
Oh, ye of little faith. I'm doing pretty well. I'm just kind of, you know, just hanging out.
Are you? Yeah. So
enjoying the 3-degree weather, you know. It just kind of keeps the humans off the street.
Thins the herd.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know it's cold because I actually put my little toboggan cap on, and I'm not a hat person.
Right.
I'm just not a hat. Yeah. But as I was explaining to Lainey our wonderful phone answer out there, my feet get cold if I don't wear a hat. And she gave me a very puzzled look. Yeah. It's because all the heat goes out of through my giant brain. So
yeah.
I got
it. It's a chimney.
It's a chimney. That's right. So my feet were getting cold, so I thought I'd better put that hat on.
You put it on your feet then?
Yeah, no, I put it on my head.
On your head, okay. Yeah,
that's the whole chimney thing you were just saying, yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks to everybody who pledged last week.
That was amazing.
A little 2-day fundraiser, birthday boost, as we are wont to do.
I couldn't get that second word. I kept saying birthday bash, but it was the birthday boost.
And also all the people who came out to the Atwood Music Space on Sunday for the birthday party.
Right, that was the bash.
Yeah, they gave a special award to Rockin' John.
Okay.
The GOAT, the greatest of all time award.
That always throws me. GOAT.
I know. Well, it's a language thing because back in, you know, a long time ago, GOAT was a negative thing. It's like somebody screwed up.
They were the GOAT. Like the scapegoat. Yeah. Push them off the cliff.
You blame somebody.
Put all your sins on its head. That's what we did. When, we remember that back in high school.
Sure. I got an A in that.
Yeah, got an A in GOAT.
In scapegoating.
Yeah, right, exactly. She did it, Your Honor.
Well, it was Minnesota, so you had to be passive aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
So it was
you insinuate. I love insinuation.
It was a little more subtle. It's I don't think she took the cookie. I don't know. You know? It's
like, people are saying.
She's got crumbs on her face, but I don't think she did it.
No,
it's a myth. But it was a treat, though, when Rockin' John got the award.
Okay.
He doesn't do this very often, but he actually used his real voice when you're speaking in public, which sounds a lot like James Earl Jones.
Luke, I'm your father.
Exactly.
Wow.
So that was quite a treat for the whole crowd. I had a guy one year when we were doing the festival circuit. What do you call it?
The Stations of the Cross.
Stations of the Cross.
Was it between the scourging or after the third time the cross falls?
There was a listener who was convinced I was Rockin' John.
Yeah.
And I couldn't talk him out of it. He thought I was like pulling his leg when I denied it. I was Peter, I had to deny him 3 times before.
getting into the religion right away here.
but it was like, no, I'm not Rockin'. Why would I lie about that? And I don't think I maintain the mystery. I don't think I sound like him. I mean...
No, I don't think so either. You have a mellifluous upper Midwestern voice, so maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. You betcha.
I said mellifluous.
You betcha.
You don't sound like that at all.
Oh, so what's going on in the world here?
Well, we mentioned Mentioned the Stations of the Cross and a couple other things there. Might as well just bring this story out, number one. This is from Dedham, Massachusetts. Leaders of a Catholic church near Boston are keeping a nativity display in the window with an anti-ice message. And this is a display is outside of St. Susanna Parish in Dedham, Massachusetts. Includes the traditional shepherds, sheep, wise guys, and they're all gathered around a hay-filled manger. But Mary, Joseph, and baby Jesus are nowhere in sight. There's a little sign that says ice was here.
Oh.
And I got to tell you that the Catholic Archdiocese of Boston was not happy.
Yeah, I bet.
And they said, don't do that. And the people at the church said, hey, we're just trying to start a conversation. You know, that's what the right-wingers always say on the podcast. Just asking questions. Just want to start a conversation. And that's the Catholic Archbishop, the Archdiocese told the parish, not I don't know if the Archbishop himself said, but the Archdiocese told the parish to take down the signage in its nativity display. But they're saying, no, we're just, we're not trying to cause a furor. We're just evoking a dialogue.
Well, good for them.
Well, you know, there's two different stories, of course, of the birth of Christ, one in Matthew and one in Luke, and they're not actually consistent with each other. Big surprise, fundamentalists, look it up. But in the Matthew version, they actually go to Egypt to try to get away from the killing machine, which is Herod, who was trying to get rid of all the kids that were born during a certain period of time.
Yeah, he was the Democrat.
That's how I understand. That's what my Bible says.
I don't know that when they're trying to come up with like biblical justifications for Trump, they often talk about the evil kings in the Old Testament
the imperfect vessel.
The imperfect vessel.
Yeah, he's pretty imperfect. He's got that down.
He definitely looks like a vessel too. The SS Trump. It's pulling in the dock.
Listing a little bit.
Yeah, listing to one side. I think he's got some problems with some maybe leaky boards too. Maybe some problems there.
He had a little public presentation at the Kennedy Center, soon to be known as the Trump Center, I assume. But
people are talking about
but,
that.
But
too,
he gave, you know, awards to himself, I'm sure, but also to Kiss and Kid Rock and
Cutting Edge of Culture,
Sylvester Stallone. Not making those names up.
No, I know. It's a horrifying revelation.
But there's a couple of great pictures when he's got. I think he's dressed up. He might be in a tux or something. I forget. But he was at the podium. There's this woman standing behind him, and she's making these faces like, oh my God, it's like something really stinks.
Well, he's rotting from the inside,
I guess.
Hey, here's some positive news. You may have heard that. The legislature in Indiana, the Indiana State Senate, voted against the redistricting efforts there. It was a substantial number, too. I think it was something like, I think it was maybe 20 Republicans voted against the president. And I mean, their Senate is, there's 50 members of the Indiana State Senate, and 40 of them are Republicans. There's only 10 Republicans in the State Senate in Indiana. Of course, they've got their own little redistricting, but this was like hyper redistricting, right? Yeah. So, but they were going to take this is called cracking, and you probably know this already. They were going to take Indianapolis and divide it up into four little slices, and then apportion it to these like bright red rural districts that directly abut them. And apparently, the Republicans in Indiana thought that was not a good idea. Also, in Missouri right now, the new congressional maps that have been created there to give the Republicans an advantage. They are actually at a subject of a petition to change this. The organizers of a petition drive in Missouri, they have this apparently available to them. They've turned in more than 300,000 signatures to the Secretary of State of Missouri, and that's well more, well bigger than that. They need 110,000, signatures, and they've got 300,000, over 300,000 now. The signatures need to be verified by election authorities and by the Secretary of State. And then apparently if it survives if there's any kind of unconstitutional issues or whatever, there'll be a legal fight. But if it survives that, then basically they could change that back to the way it was. So they have that option there. So this using Wisconsin as their model, it turned out has not worked that well. So people are kind of onto it now, and it was so blatant too.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I mean, it's pretty extreme, but. It's interesting when these things are done. Yeah. The one thing that's really obvious is that when people live in cities of any size, you know, a fairly good size,
sure,
you know, 100,000 or more, it tends to be a blue area.
Yeah,
because you have to learn to get along with people. You're like, maybe you see brown.
That's an interesting theory.
You see brown people once in a while. You have to take the bus or something.
Are you saying that promotes a more of a understanding attitude? Perhaps?
Yeah, more of like a civil.
Yeah, yeah.
Civic,
you see a lot of people that are very different from you, and you're not horrified by that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah. I remember it was a long time ago, but there were some. It was a I don't know. Some state tournament was in town, wrestling or something. And so there were a lot of people on State Street.
Sure.
That, you know, were kind of looking around. You could tell they were visiting. And, and there was this guy kind of leading his group of people, like a dad.
Yeah.
And they were looking for a place to eat. And I was kind of walking behind him, just happened to be stuck behind him on the sidewalk. And they walked into this one restaurant slash bar, whatever. It's Wisconsin. It's a bar.
It's the same thing. Yeah. There's a bar with food and a bar without very good food.
and he walked in, and it was like a cartoon where he just slammed on the brakes, you know, and you could see like the smoke coming from his heels. And he got and I heard him talking to his family or friends or whatever.
Sure.
And he was saying, "Well, there's like this great big rainbow flag in there, and we don't want to eat there."
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah. Maybe it was a Skittles ad. Yeah. Everything of that.
So this guy has never had a gay person wait on him in a restaurant ever in his life, I'm sure.
That he knows of. I'm surprised they weren't going down the street in one of those big hamster balls, you know. He didn't want to touch anything.
Big Humvee.
Who knows what transsexual may have touched that wall that you're walking against. Hey, you know, the big question right now before the U.S. Supreme Court is whether the various 50 boards and commissions that are part of the executive branch of our government are actually under the direct control of the President of the United States. And I saw a couple of, I know this stuff anyway, but I saw a couple of articles this week that reminded me, you know, back in 1790, the United States was trying to set aside money to pay off the war debt. That was one of the ways the Constitution got adopted, by the way, was that the government would take over the war debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they created a special commission called the Sinking Fund Commission. A sinking fund is a term from that period, which refers to basically setting aside money for some other purpose. There were 5 members on the commission, and Congress designated it as an independent agency that operated outside of the president's control. 1790.
So it's ambiguous.
Exactly. So these yahoos on the Supreme Court are like, yo, we think it's the unitary executive, you know? It's like they know nothing about the law. They know nothing about history. They know nothing about the intents of the founders. It's just like, just make it up as you go along.
Oh, that's funny. So.
I have a book at home that's, you will not be surprised to know this. I found this at, I think it was St. Vinny's. It's a congressional directory, as they call it. They still have those today, by the way. Congressional directory. It's the information that a congressperson needs about all the branches of government and mm-hmm. what the Congress, you know, what the Capitol looks like on the inside and stuff. And they give all the addresses and the names of different officials in the U.S. government, especially in the executive branch, which, of course, is quite large. And I got one from 1903.
Wow.
When Teddy Roosevelt, of course, was president. It's in lovely condition. And in the back, it's this giant list of all the different independent agencies. 1903. This is not like a new concept, including the Interstate Commerce Commission, which, again, the president could appoint people with the approval of Congress. Congress makes the laws. Congress decides what entities we have, what departments we have. They've done that since the very first. And then the president just deals with that. I mean, that's Congress makes the laws.
Right.
At least it used to. So,
unless the president hereby declares.
Yeah, well, that's apparently the case. Yeah. So the idea that they could set it up and say it's independent, it's basically for the Supreme Court saying that's not the way it works. They're challenging, literally challenging, the power of Congress to make laws.
Yeah. So, well, it's like the challenge to birthright citizenship.
Yeah.
It's like, it's pretty clear in the Constitution what it says. This isn't like the Second Amendment where it rambles all over and you can interpret it 100 different ways. It's really straightforward.
But see, they don't believe in originalism. This is the funny thing that happened. So there were the Supreme Court, conservative Supreme Court justices believed in originalism. That was the idea of like, find out what this was all about when they first put it together. But they realized that wasn't going to pull them enough in the fascist direction. And that's when Scalia did his little trick with the Second Amendment. Well, the plain language on the page says this. There's never anything that's plain language on a page. Anything that you read, you have to figure out the intent of the person that wrote it.
Yeah.
That's what it means, what they were trying to communicate to you. So they can make up anything they want. They basically just look at whatever it says there and say, well, I think it means that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I guess. So they weren't able to get as much of what they wanted with the originalism approach because they want to go too far, so now they got this like, well, whatever it says on the page. Yeah. So they come up with crazy crap like, well, of course, we all know that the president is the executive. No, what we know is that Congress has the power to create independent agencies.
Yeah. So I've been watching there's a miniseries on Netflix about James Garfield.
Hot damn.
Death by Lightning.
Death by Infection.
Well, apparently that was a quote of his when somebody was telling him that he needs, you know, to not be so open with out in the public so much.
Sure.
He needs more security or something.
Yeah.
And he goes, assassination, it's like death by lightning. You can't really worry about it. And
until it happens.
Yeah. Well, they thought it was such an anomaly. I mean, it was Lincoln. It was a civil war. So they kind of said, well, you know, it was civil war tensions.
I think the only other person that had an assassination attempt was actually Jackson, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
Also very controversial.
That was probably personal.
that was some husband who was coming after
it. It's going to be my guess.
Yeah.
It's going to be my guess.
But is that your guess, Goodwin?
Yeah. But it's a pretty good miniseries. It's like 4 episodes, about an hour each.
So that's pretty mini.
It's you'd enjoy it. It's really well done.
Like
you see a lot of the dirty machine politics. It kind of makes, you know, it helps you realize, I mean, we all know this, but, you know, it's never been pristine. I mean, you know.
It helps you realize why, again, the unitary executive was not the idea they had.
Exactly,
I mean, the civil service, it used to be that presidents, starting with Jackson, by the way, would just appoint all their cronies to all these jobs in the federal government. Before that, they tried to be, even though they went back and forth between the two parties that were present at that time, they tried to be a little more balanced about this. But when Jackson got, he's like, you know, the victor goes the spoils, and that's what they call it, the spoils system.
Sure, sure. So, well, my favorite part of this, and this is kind of brings us into the current times, is that the most powerful people in the country were the customs people in New York.
That's a lot of money coming through there.
They said it was like 3/4 of the federal budget.
Yep.
I don't know if that's accurate, but
Because they didn't have income taxes.
Yeah, so it was all tariffs.
Yep.
And like the person who controlled that was like the most powerful person in the country.
Chester A. Arthur.
Chester A. Arthur. Exactly.
Old mutton chops himself.
The only thing about this movie is there's a lot of familiar actors in there.
Sure.
And it's a lot of like, oh, that guy and that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And plus, name people too. But they're all wearing these giant beards and mutton chops and stuff. So I have to kind of like do a little translation in my brain. It's like, oh, that's the guy from, you know, Parks and Rec. No, wait a minute.
You got to mention. They should.
That's Chester A. Arthur.
They should have an app where you can like shave them to find out who they are. You know? Like, you're probably watching it on your computer, right? So just get the app. Special app. Beard Away. We call it Beard Away. Just put it on. And
shave Chester A. Arthur for me. Oh, it's Ron Swanson. I get it.
Exactly.
But no, it's well done. I haven't quite finished it yet. But
That's excellent. That's a wonderful holiday viewing for me.
You would love it.
Exactly.
The White House is trying to pardon the Colorado County clerk convicted of tampering with voting machines.
Yeah.
Is this the one where they were state charges, though? And then,
yeah, that's state. Yeah, it's all symbolic. They can't do anything about it legally.
Yeah, but well.
Well, yeah, legally. Because they didn't put that in there. Yeah, I think the lovely thing about that is the only evidence they had of any kind of vote tampering during that period of time was from the behalf of people like that and the president of the United States, who was trying to find votes.
Right.
For some reason, that's okay for him to have said that, apparently. So, hey, by the way, I just read a little economic news here that China's exports are now, their surplus is over $1 trillion. So it turns out telling them we don't need their stuff doesn't make any difference anymore. we are just a backwater as far as they're concerned. Yeah, they got attention recently because they'd hit over a trillion dollars now. China's customs agency, they got their own Chester A. Arthur, I'm sure, announced on Monday that the country's accumulated trade surplus reached $1.08 trillion through November, and so you know they're not buying anything or selling anything from us. And you know what? They don't need it, apparently. I want to mention that Israel is a big surprise to everybody. This is 2 months after the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Israel continues to bar journalists from entering the Gaza Strip. On Sunday, the Israeli Supreme Court gave the government an extension in responding to a petition from journalists to access the area. This is the ninth petition and ninth delay that has come up since September of 2024. So we're over a year in, and the Israeli government still hasn't explained why it doesn't want to let journalists go into Gaza. I wonder what the reason could be.
I don't know. You know, there's so much horrible stuff coming out of the White House. You lose track. I mean, there's just this tsunami of horrible things. And I didn't realize they were doing
this. It's like
a
backed up sewer. They were What's that smell?
Yeah, now we're back to the lady at the Kennedy Center.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
So the White House got rid of the ASL translator who would translate for deaf and hard of hearing people.
Why in the hell would they do that?
When Trump was speaking, or when Levitt is speaking,
the spokesperson. Yeah.
And they said, well, it was distracting, and they couldn't be sure that their message was actually getting across, and they were told there's a law that you should have that.
Yeah.
And so they were told that. And
it's also just courteous.
Well, that too. It's like not being a jerk. Yeah.
You were about to say the D word, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
That too.
The jerk.
The jerks, yes.
But they went so far, the White House has sued over the fact that they don't want to do this.
Oh, my Lord.
And
for a penny, in for a pound.
They've been making an argument that it resists advocates' push for sign language interpretation at press briefings. They say that it would severely intrude on the president's prerogative to control the image he presents to the public. No, it wouldn't. It's just their words. They're translating his words.
If that's his problem, he better get on the stick, because the image that I see is a bloviating moron. I mean, I think a person who does American Sign Language could represent that well. I mean, why not? Yeah. I won't even say what sign you're making over there.
The U.S. District Judge. Here's the problem. Amir Ali issued an order last month requiring the White House to provide real-time ASL interpretation for Trump and Levitt's briefings, rejecting the administration's argument that closed captioning and transcripts give Americans who are deaf or hard of hearing sufficient access to the president's statements. Mm. The Trump administration immediately appealed the ruling, and they've begun providing interpretation for more events since the court issued its injunction, although two sides of the case have disagreed over the specifics of what's required. It's like, don't ever miss an opportunity to be a jerk. You know?
Well, the thing with they're going back to the Times New Roman font. Did you hear about that? I was like, Calibri, I mean, I use that in my email messages. It's an easy-to-read, clear font, and it's often indicated for people who have vision trouble, you know, especially if you've got, you know, if your vision is impaired in any way, because it doesn't have a lot of little, you know, it's sans serif, so you don't have a lot of little curly cues and things that you might be harder to make out. Well, they decided that they're going to go back to that. And here's the argument that I just loved. So first, they said it was all about DEI, right? So that's bad, you know, because we're trying to actually help people that maybe don't have the same ability
as we renowned do. as the DEI font. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
People always, you know,
exactly.
Talk about that.
But what I loved is they said that switching to Calibri achieved nothing except the, and I love this, degradation of the department's official correspondence. Really? Is that what it's about?
Wow.
Serif typefaces, this is according to Marco Rubio, who knows all about typefaces apparently, are generally perceived to connote tradition, formality, and ceremony. So,
which this administration's all about.
Yeah, it's all about. You bet.
But Times Roman looks kind of crappy, though. I mean, it looks very old fashioned.
Well, it's not just it doesn't. Yeah, it looks dense in a way that I mean, again. I have all you went back when you were you had your job. I'm sure you sent out a lot of email messages, and the two things I always want with my email messages are short paragraphs and stick to the point, but also easy, quick readability. I don't want people to have to decipher it in any way.
Right.
But we want to have formality and dignity, and we don't want to be degraded by using a DEI font.
Where did that come?
Everything is just like they're just. I just don't even understand.
I think part
that
of it is it's an old fashioned thing.
Yeah.
And
they're
this whole thing of turning the clock back.
Well, Carolingian unicles. I mean, you could use if you want to go back to the really fancy, you know, like from the 1200s or something. You know, that's a time honored way of writing.
No, we're only going back to the 1880s, I think. Maybe.
Well, they don't even understand the past. You know, I mean, that's part of the idea too.
Oh. Tariffs will get rid of all your income tax. We had tariffs and no income tax.
Yeah, we had tariffs in the 1930s, too, and guess what happened? There's no sense that the past is a dynamic place where people fought over these things. Do you know what I mean? It's just like they can't imagine now that there's actually differences of opinion. Or we came to create things for the way they are for a reason as opposed to just being jerks or something.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
Speaking of jerks, I saw that Jimmy Kimmel's show was renewed. And, you know, I think that I know why Trump hates Kimmel so very much.
Why is that?
Is because if you ever watch him, he is kind of jerky. Like, he's much more, I would say, you know, you watch somebody like Colbert, he's kind of a clown. Mm-hmm. Kimmel is just like a joke machine. He just fires him off in this kind of with this kind of attitude. And to some extent, I think this is what really gets Trump more, you know, because he probably seems like he has a little bit more macho cred, possibly, and that's something that Trump will never have. So of course he hates that. But anyway, he just got his contract renewed. In case people are keeping track,
here are some numbers about Europeans traveling to the United States during the last 11 months or so. Well, that's played out. People from the UK, visitors, tourism has dropped by about, it's not real precise on these graphs, but it's about 10 or 15%. Sweden, the same. Spain, it's a little lower, 20%. Norway, it's down a little more than 20%. Iceland is down about 30%.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And same with Denmark. Germany's down about 25%, and Austria about 20-some percent. So, well, the Iceland and the Denmark ones are probably because of the stupid Greenland stuff.
And I'm sure their attention's being drawn to that all the time.
Yeah, so. Well, Denmark came out, and one of their official security agencies this week said that the United States was a security threat to the world.
Yep, so, no, I think there's something to that.
Yeah.
Certainly they're a security threat, I would think, if I'm living in any country in the Western Hemisphere.
Especially if you have oil.
I'd be looking around with a little bit of concern.
Yeah. You know, I haven't followed the oil tanker thing too much, but how do you justify just grabbing a ship full of oil? I mean, isn't that like piracy? I mean, I mean, they weren't in our waters.
Whatevs.
They weren't a threat to us or anything.
Yeah.
They've made a a few little comments about, well, we thought the oil was trying to avoid embargoes or something. It's like, which we've always been so concerned about, you know.
And I heard there was fentanyl in that ship. Fentanyl was in the ship.
Yeah. And trans immigrants or something.
Yeah, trans immigrants taking fentanyl. No, they don't need justification. I mean, it's power politics of the basest kind. I mean, it really is. I do feel like we've reverted. We're kind of reverting to an earlier stage of
gunboat diplomacy.
Social international development. And you know, I mean, they signaled that with their whole, and now it's the Department of War BS. Yeah. I mean,
what are you going to do to stop us?
Yeah, I mean, war is an aggressive, you know, military posture. Whereas defense, the reason why they changed the name from war to defense was after the UN was founded, it was believed that any wars in the future would be ones of defense. You know, that would be the only time you'd use military weaponry was against somebody who was, you know, the aggressor. Mm-hmm. But now we're the aggressor, so you know. And so rightly named.
Although I still think it's technically the Department of Defense.
Yeah, no, it's just a nickname right now.
They just haven't gone through.
You can call it Fred if you want.
It's like the Gulf of Trump or whatever we're calling that now. It's not real.
Yeah, when I look at that guy, all I can think of as the Gulf of Trump.
The Gulf of Trump. Yeah. Speaking of the Defense Department, they had a budget that came up for a vote this week.
Alrighty.
$901 billion.
Oh, well. Couldn't do anything else
short
with
that of a
money.
Trillion there. Yeah, exactly. We don't have any money for, you know, SNAP benefits or anything, but 901, and about half the Democrats voted for it, you know.
Sure.
As they always do. I mean, so.
Yeah, the corporate welfare department.
Yep.
Gosh, I know those last three planes we made for you were crap, but this time's the charm.
There's jobs. Jobs down here in Tennessee. Yeah.
We dig a hole and we fill it up. We dig a hole and we fill it up.
So $901 billion approved pretty easily, too. I mean, there wasn't a lot of debate or anything.
Yeah.
It just went through just like a goose.
Like something through a goose?
Yeah.
Like military spending through a goose.
Yeah. Let's leave it at that. Hey, the Geminids, if I'm saying this right, the Geminids meteor shower is this weekend.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's the peak's on Saturday and Sunday night. Saturday night, Sunday morning, the 13th and 14th, after midnight. If you go out earlier, around 10 o'clock, you'll still see plenty if the sky is clear.
Mm.
The moon's in a waning crescent phase.
Indeed.
So it doesn't rise until before sunrise, so that won't interfere at all. So
excellent.
So bundle up and go on out and look at some meteors. So the shower's getting stronger over time, which I thought was interesting. It's just because of the way the Earth passes through this debris field, and as time goes on, it's making it more and more intense. So anyway, so that should be a good one.
Cool.
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org. You could be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up on the archives page. And get the WRT app. That's the easiest way to listen. You can listen live or listen to the archives.
Or listen dead. We love the zombies, too.
We've got plenty of those. You've seen our listeners. And thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, you can listen via podcast or Spotify or Apple Pods. So
I just want to mention, too, the people that pledged last week. I did get a couple of requests for Mindless Minion cards, and I want you to know I will be getting those to you, but I haven't quite haven't consulted top numerologists yet, so okay. I need to. It's in the mail.
They're all working for the CDC now.
Exactly.
Wasn't the phrenologist.
37 is your lucky number. Excellent.
But I have cancer.
That's 37. What can I say?
All right, we're going to take a break, play some announcements, and then come back with
the new license plates. I'm so excited.
In Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
You got some choices now.
Oh, great. And librarians are fed up with AI recommendations.
Hear, hear.
So, all right, we'll be right back.
I'm about to Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in homebrewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
Get past the people, get past the hitman!
And we're back.
So I was very excited to see that the state of Wisconsin is offering people options with respect to their license plates. And the reason why I'm excited is one of the options is a retro plate, which basically is the old Wisconsin license plate. It's this,
the yellow one?
The black, black letters with yellow in the background. It's not, the shade is a little different from the traditional ones, which was more of a kind of an amber or goldenrod. This one is more like a butter color, but still, I've always thought that was a very elegant, simple, and striking design. And so people can, if they wish, purchase a license plate that has this little bit of nostalgia and also, I think, quite attractive. The other one you can get is the so-called blackout plate. I've seen a few of those recently, and that's basically black with white letters. That's especially good for people who are trying to figure out what your license plate's number are, like the police. So,
is it in Times Roman?
Yeah. No, it's in some DEI font. I don't know.
Comic Sans.
Comic Sans, exactly. But at any rate, so that's also available if you'd like, you know, if you're into the, you know, the zombie apocalypse or something. But the state's 2-year spending plan includes a $5.5 million to launch the new plates. And they figure with people switching to these plates that they might generate a lot of money, maybe as much as $25 million over the next 3 years. And they're probably going to get mine, actually. So I love the I thought I love license plates that are simple with nice color combinations.
Sure.
And when they went, because I've been here long enough, we've been here long enough to remember when it was the yellow and black plate, and then they went to the one now with all the little, the first problem was they had a statewide competition. And you know that's always going to end up with like Bodie McBoatface, right? So that's not a good idea. So there's like this indiscriminate line of crap at the bottom of the, which from a distance you can't even tell what it is. That's our license plate. So I like the idea of the simple license plates without much to it.
Yeah.
So.
I got last year or earlier this year, I got new license plates. I got the Ice Age ones.
Oh, very nice.
And the only reason I did that, well, I like the Ice Age trail.
Sure, I know.
You
love the Ice Age period.
I do love the Ice Age.
Yep. You're all about the Ice Age.
I grew up in Minnesota.
It
just feels natural. But no, they've got a woolly mammoth on the license plate.
Oh, of course they do. So, I should have known.
Yeah. One day I was sitting at a stoplight and there was a car in front of me that had that license plate, and I go, they've had a license plate with a woolly mammoth? Why don't I have that? So I ran home and ordered it right away.
Yeah. Excellent.
But they're very nice. They're pretty though.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, a little bit of them, you know, you have to pay a little extra, but a lot of that goes to
it's worth every penny.
Goes to the Ice Age Friends of the Ice Age Trail.
Oh, okay.
There. Goes to feed hungry mammoths or something. I don't know.
Or create them.
Yeah. To make hungry mammoths. So 70 dead vultures found by a school in Ohio.
Yeah.
And
Hinckley. Was it Hinckley?
I don't know. Claremont County Public Health, St. Bernadette School in Pierce Township, about 20 miles southeast of Cincinnati.
Well, see, that's the vultures come to Hinckley. Once a year in Ohio. That's one of... I'm not making this up.
What, to look for investment opportunities?
Yeah, it's just one of the great things about living in the Buckeye State.
Well, it was sad that the 70 vultures were at the school, and they when they were dying, the kids in the school all circled around them and waited for them.
Oh, jeez. So what did they die of?
I don't know. And they were taken to the state lab for testing, probably meth, since it's Ohio.
Oh, it's Ohio. That or boredom.
Very powerful avian flu.
Oh, dear.
Bird
heavens.
Flu.
That's
and,
not nice.
So... But that there's no way that could be transmitted to humans.
No,
so.
Never.
But and plus we've got all these vaccinations. So.
Oh yeah. What are you talking about? what was that word you used?
Stick something in me. That,
Then
Bill Gates will track me.
Yeah.
There was a story this week that they haven't implemented this yet, but the I don't know if it's this whoever the Homeland Security I guess would enforce this. They want to make it so that now right now if you make a deposit or withdrawal of over $10,000, that has to be reported to Homeland Security.
I know all about it.
Yeah, somebody they want to drop that to $1,000.
Really?
Yeah, and that's a pretty low threshold. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty,
who's keeping track of that?
Well, they're going to have to report it to the federal government. You know, all these people who were always terrified of Big Brother and Obama spying on you. And you know, Bill Gates, you know, getting that vaccine in you so he could turn you into a zombie or something. This is something real. This is real where they are going to be monitoring.
Yeah, but you're missing the point. It's the wrong people are monitoring you. That's what they're worried about.
Yeah.
As long as it's the right people monitoring you, then everything is fine.
If you have nothing to fear, if you have nothing to hide.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's really cranking it down there.
That is amazing.
Because it's pretty normal for someone to get $1,000 if they're going to go traveling or something.
Sure,
I mean, mostly you'd use credit cards.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you want to have cash for an emergency.
Yeah,
you know? So.
I was paying for something with cash this morning, and this person that I was, it was at a coffee place, and person was kind of amazed. They were like,
what is this?
Yeah, they were just kind of like, well, it's like, wow, you have a lot of it. Because I had like more than just, you know, the necessary amount. And I just kind of like, well, yeah, I it's sweet and untraceable, I said. And then the person started laughing, the barista or whatever started laughing. He's like, yeah, I don't like people to know what I'm paying for with my money. And she was like, very good idea. And then she did a little finger gun thing, cracked me up.
Oh,
I was just like, I think she thought I was like a gangster in disguise or something. I don't know.
There was a show, I forget what it was. It was like about a news department. And Andrea Martin was in it from Second City TV. And she was playing the mom of the main character. I forget who it was. But anyway, so she wanted to be close to her kids, so she got a job as an intern at the network.
Okay.
And, you know, all the other interns were 19, 20 years old, and she was in her 60s or something. And they were, like, throwing in money for to buy a pizza or something one day, and this one young intern was really confused. She goes, she gave me these green coupons.
Coupons. That's a great way of thinking of it, actually. Hey, the holiday train is coming through. That's right. The U.S. holiday train is touring the United States and Canada through December 21st, and it's going to be stopping in Wisconsin.
What's the holiday train?
Oh, wait. No. Maybe it's already stopped. Oh, dear. I think it has.
We missed it.
Sorry. I'm too late.
Is that where you get your presents now?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it came through on Wednesday and Thursday.
So what is the holiday train?
It's just a train that comes through in the holidays. It's a Christmas. It's got Christmas themed lights and decorations,
okay.
And one of the cars has a music stage where you can go listen and so on. It stops in Portage and Wisconsin Dells and Wauston, and it's going through. So, yep, but it did done it. It went through Columbus. That's where the. Have you ever ridden the train?
Not that one.
And I took the train. They have a new line that goes up to the Twin Cities. We did that last year, and it was great. It took the same amount of time as if you were driving, so it's about 5 hours. But you know what? You get to sit there and eat a hot dog and look out
around
the window. Yeah, I mean,
walk
it's like
and have a beer.
Yeah, read something. You know, and not have to worry about traffic or anything. I loved it. It was great. But you do have to drive to Columbus, of course, to do it.
Yeah, That never made any sense to me. Why is there?
Well, maybe we'll have a train here soon. So we'll see.
So librarians are fed up with AI for this
well,
one
get
reason.
In line.
What's been happening is people will do something with a chat bot.
Sure.
And there'll be citations.
We won't say what it was.
Well, yeah, but there'll be citations for a book.
That doesn't exist?
And it doesn't exist.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so people will come to the library and say, I want this book on the, you know, the rings of Saturn and how, yeah. you know, the Illuminati
yeah.
put them together or something.
Right, right.
And the librarians go, there's no such book.
And, yeah. and they refuse to believe it?
And Yeah, and they refuse to believe it.
Of course.
And then they think the librarians are hiding these
of course they do.
Secret books.
Because you always find, that what I love about the conspiracy theorists is there actually are real conspiracies, but they never seem to understand that.
Yeah,
you know, the idea that there's a bunch of people that want to basically bewitch us with their ridiculous products, that never occurs to anybody. But the librarians, they're the ones that are the sneaky ones. They're not making any money off of this.
We got books in the back, yeah, and yeah. you can't see them.
Yeah, yeah. The people that are trying to rip you off, we just follow them in droves. Yeah, but the people who have some standard of practice where they must be up to something.
One time, a long time ago, we were my friends and I were in La Crosse, and we took a tour of the Old Style Brewery back when they made Old Style up there. And the tour guide was really funny, and he was goofing around with us, and we were joking back and forth. And he said, you know, I can't show this to you. I can't show this to the public, but there's a room back here with a giant Viking boat. And it's all decorated up. They won't let me show people back there. And a friend of mine worked at a newspaper then. He goes, oh, I got to see that. Let me see that. I've got credentials. And he takes out his press pass. And the guy goes, okay. And he opens the door, and it's an empty room.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah. So you librarians, quit hiding those secret books from us there for all the money you get. It's like the climate scientists. They're all making big money on their climate denials. I don't know.
So did you know that there was a Harvard for Santa Clausing?
No.
Yep. It's called the Charles W. Howard Santa Claus School.
No, you only get Santa Clauses whose dads had been Santa Claus?
Yeah, it's in Michigan and was established in 1937. It bills itself as the world's oldest Santa school.
Yeah.
And there was an article this week in the Wisconsin State Journal talking about one of the guys that's a graduate who's the Santa here in Wisconsin. He works out of Beaver Dam. And so there's apparently it's a big deal. And the guy that started the school from 1948 to 1965, Charles W. Howard, was the Santa Claus in the Thanksgiving Day Parade. So he thought he'd be pretty good at starting a Santa school. And I have to tell you, it's so funny. When I saw this story, I immediately thought of an incident that occurred to Companion and I. We were at some kind of local, it was like business organization thing. And we were all sitting at a table, and there were like seven or eight of us, and we all went around the table and told people who we were and what we did. And I talked about my life, and Companion talked about, you know, being an astrophysicist and so on. And everybody was just saying their little thing. And then there was a guy and the minute he opened his mouth and said this, we all thought, oh, yeah, of course. He said, I'm a professional Santa Claus. And he had the big beard with the twirled up mustache, and he was wearing a business suit.
Yeah.
But you could totally see it, right? Yeah. Because of his robust figure and sure. you know, yeah. hairy face and so on. And
what does he drive Uber for 50 weeks?
We asked him that among many, many questions that everybody else, when they said what they did for a living or whatever, it was like, yeah, whatever,
fat.
Santa Claus, everybody was immediately.
Astrophysicist. Boring.
Santa Claus.
Nerd.
Yeah, exactly. It was so funny because he instantly became the center of attention. And every question, I mean, the riveting questions. I mean, really want to know the details. And one of the questions is, what do you do in your off time? And he says that...
just like 99% of the year.
Yeah, well, he says the thing is you have to get a good gig, you know. That's you got to get a big, good professional gig to carry you through. And he does other things. Apparently, he's an actor, does other kind of stuff. So he says, I do a lot of Santa Clauses in plays and things that.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
during the rest of the year and so on. And apparently also a lot of modeling, you know, for advertisements,
yeah.
because they're not making the advertisements necessarily
right,
close
right.
to the season,
sure.
so they can be stretched out over
yeah.
the year.
Oh, okay.
So this was, a little keyhole look into the world of Santa acting. So
that's like the time Floyd and I were in Miami we were traveling with an Elvis impersonator because we wrote a book about Elvis.
Oh, right. I remember that.
And,
of course.
And we walked into a Cuban restaurant. And the place went crazy. They acted like Elvis was actually there. And this guy was, this impersonator was just, you know, eating
yeah.
it up.
Yeah.
But there were people like running back to the kitchen and telling the kitchen staff to come out. They came out and they were taking pictures with Elvis and shaking his hand.
I love it.
It's like, you know, that's not really Elvis, right?
Well, I think Elvis has reached the level where he's
he's like Santa Claus.
He's a fictional character, yeah, right?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
So what does Santa Claus school do? Is it like, okay, class, ho, ho, ho. Ho, no, ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho. No, come on, pay attention.
They said it's a lot to do with like presence and personality.
Yeah, yeah.
So it has to do with, you know, it's the kind of thing where what do you do when a kid wets on you? You know, I mean, there's 100 things you gotta figure out. Yeah, exactly. So they work on things like sleigh driving skills, toy making, and the best way to wear the suit and style the beard, and basically how best to perform as Santa.
Oh, okay.
We work with special needs children, and then, of course, this requires a certain kind of attitude and interaction. And we had a mom who came, this is according to this one Santa that got interviewed, we had a mom who came with her 4 autistic kids who ranged in ages from 4 to 12, and you have to know how to talk to kids. So.
Very good.
Yeah, that is good.
Hey, we've been pretty real.
Sounds kind of DEI, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
we're against that now, I
Can't
guess.
Can't we change it to some guy with a stick who beats children?
Oh, you mean Grumpus.
Yeah. No, Trumpus.
Trumpus, yeah. Okay, kids, you better behave or Trumpus is coming for you.
He is almost a fictional character at this point.
He is, yeah. And,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean the costume he wears, it is a costume that he wears, the baggy suit and the long ties and the hair and the makeup. I mean, it's like an Elvis impersonator pretty much.
Wow.
But he would love, like, whacking kids with a stick.
I sure.
Give him a golf club.
Yeah.
I need my driver.
He's coming in his magic golf cart. Look out.
He's going to steal all your toys.
That's right. He's going to steal your toys. Oh, man. I see it now.
Hey, we've been remiss on monkey news for a few weeks here.
I was going to make that observation.
Why not? No segue needed. Here's a story. Chimpanzee calls trigger unique brain activity in humans, revealing shared vocal processing skills.
Oh.
It's from University of Geneva. Shows that certain areas of our auditory cortex respond specifically to the vocalizations of chimps. And so it just shows that how similar we are, and that our brain recognizes that. And many participants heard chimpanzee vocalizations, and it kind of triggered this in your brain. And it was not the same for like bonobos or smaller, less similar chimps.
Well, I have a monkey story too. This talking about kissing among gorillas, orangutans, and baboons, and it turns out, of course, that they do it in the same way that humans do. It's not always sexual. It's often just it's an act that about vulnerability and trust between two creatures, and kissing. I love this. Is described by the researchers as a non-agonistic interaction involving directed, intraspecific oral contact with some movement of the lips, mouth parts, and food transfer.
I'm getting hot over here.
Yeah, exactly. So it turns out that when we think about what our monkey ancestors were doing back in the day and continue to do parallel to us, it's probably the case that humans and other primates have been smooching for millions of years.
No.
And I'll move it a little bit beyond that. It turns out that ants smooch, and so do fish according to at least one definition.
Really?
The definition I just read. So I got something. We got a little message here. It's, let's see.
Someone brought you a little book there.
Doug Haynes. Doug Haynes. And it says, Pants, I just finished this biography of Nixon. And thought, thank you. This is like my first Christmas present. And thought it might be of interest to you. If you already have a copy, you can feel free to pass it on. I always enjoyed the show and especially enjoyed our conversation about the Humanities Building.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Humanities Building guy.
He was, while you were gone, we had a cavalcade of different community folks, and Doug was one of those. And this is, let's see, do I have this? No, I don't. This is lovely. Okay. So this is the new biography came out it's 2015, came out about Nixon. So this will be the I'll carry this with companion and I are going to Norway over the break. So I'll carry this there so they know I'm a real American.
Okay. He's got a book. Kill him.
Yeah, right. Book about Nixon. Our greatest president, of course.
That's
right. Yeah.
My Pillow's CEO, Mike Lindell, announced he's running for Minnesota governor.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't he? He's tremendously in debt, I think. He probably needs the job.
He's probably.
I need the work, everybody. Okay, let's give it to that guy.
Well, he keeps moving his stuff like to different warehouses
because
they aren't paying their bills. And,
you know, this is the.
He keeps losing.
I kind of feel bad for him. He's a little bit like Rudy, right? It's like you give your all to the guy that sucks the life out of you, you know, and here he is. His business was ruined as a result.
Just puts the boot in your face.
You hope it's in your face.
So, I think he'd make a fine governor for Minnesota.
Yeah. Wow.
There's a children's hospital in, where are they at? In Portland, I believe. In Portland. And there are a lot of places are trying to, you know, do toy fundraisers or toy drives this time of year.
Sure.
And do you know what organization has come up with the most money for the toy drives in Portland?
Can't imagine.
It's the Strippers Organization.
Here.
Strippers of Portland are now the number one donor of toys to the Children's Hospital.
All right.
They'll give you the shirt off their back.
So yeah. What kind of toys do they contribute?
Yeah, you got to be careful there. Yeah. Nope, take this one back.
This toy is ribbed for your pleasure.
No, they've donated $180,000 worth of toys.
Well, good for them.
Over the past 14 years.
Heavens above.
It's an annual event called Tatas for Toys.
Oh, dear. Bodacious Tatas for Toys, yes, right. Oh, Lord God.
So, thank you, mothers and daughters, for...
Good for them. Yeah. All right.
I love the line in 30 Rock when Liz was going to tag along with the guys to a strip club. She goes, let's go see some mothers and daughters.
Yikes. Hey, I just want to get in real quickly. I got called up for jury duty on Monday.
Oh, yeah. How'd
that go? And I went in and they let me go. They don't want me.
They just took one
but
look at you.
I have to say, I did have a very funny experience. There was this very blousy old gal that came in and she looked around and she didn't see any chairs to sit down. She said, whose lap do I have to sit in while I'm waiting? I thought, now there's a woman with chutzpah. It was great.
Did you offer her your lap?
No. She found somebody else. Okay. Someone more appropriate.
Oh, look, Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a study that says parents who support school prayer also favor arming teachers.
Yeah.
So... Gotta cover all your bases.
Yeah, you never know.
Jaguar's here.
Hey, Jag. Boy, he has that big box. I feel like he's going to pull out a pizza or something. Oh, he wants some voice there. You want to give him a...
Oh, I didn't even see
Yeah,
that.
He's... No, you could always come to my microphone,
it's
buddy.
It's not pizza, but it's just music.
Is it pizza music?
Not yet.
Food for your brain?
Not yet. But I am going to have Catfish Stevenson on the show around 3 o'clock.
Cool.
Live here in the studio.
Okay.
That's what we call forward promotion.
So why does your hat say Angels of Dirt?
It's a documentary about a female motocross racer named Charlotte.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that Wendy Schneider, who is did she, the Smart Studios.
She's the eponymous angel?
Yeah, she's dead.
What?
She's dead, yeah.
She's dead?
Yeah. A little spoiler. But it's a great documentary.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Time for us to declare... The weekend. Enjoy your weekend. Bundle up. It's going to be chilly out there.
It is.
Right?
It is.
Like below zero chilly?
They're canceling the high.
There is no high. It's colder than Mars.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my new...
Take that, Elon.
But bundle up and go look at the meteor shower.
That'd be great,
yeah. It'd be fun. So look up some information about that. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. Stick around. The kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with the Real Jaguar? Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday on My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT.
All right.
Did you blow the little kazoo yet?
I did.
Yeah, I was.
You're in a haze. You're busy thinking about the.
I'm automatic pilot.
Yeah, right. Off like a prom dress.
I am. I'm leaving town for a little bit here.
Oh, where are you going?
Oh, just up to Baraboo and hang out there.
We'll have a good time.
Clown College.
You need a refresher?
I flunked unicycle. Hey, it's 2:00. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM. Stick around then and listen to the kiosk, as we said earlier. Pants, great to see you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye bye.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, December 12th.
This is Bird Note. Yellow-eyed juncos can be found shuffling through leaf litter in the southeast corner of Arizona and central Mexico, searching for tasty seeds from pines and oaks. And although these fire-eyed birds stay within the same general area year-round, they sometimes make a migration of sorts, not from north to south, but from the high mountains to the lowlands or the other way around. It's called altitudinal migration. In the warm summer months, some yellow-eyed juncos prefer to nest at higher elevations where their nests on the ground are less vulnerable to predators. But as winter approaches, the scarcity of food in the snowy peaks often pushes the juncos back down to the desert floor. This altitudinal migration is common for many bird species that live along mountain slopes. Another intriguing migrant